And welcome to HeroCast 2011, Dwarfcast Episode 52. Today we will be discussing Summer 2011 superhero movies. I'd like to introduce you to executive producer Jim Caswell. He's a super freak, super freak, he's super freaky! Also with us today is special correspondent Ken Halloran. He's a freak.
And that's Doug Zeitlin, otherwise known as Barney Barnes, Bucky's illegitimate cousin 4 times removed. This summer has been a very heavy summer as far as superhero movies go. The question is, how many superhero movies are too many superhero movies?
Two. Sorry, I just thought you wanted an answer to that. I didn't realize it was a rhetorical question.
So which two would you have done? Actually, you said two is too many. That means which one would you have done?
I was thinking like a Hollywood producer, it would have been X-Men.
Except for the fact that X-Men didn't make as much money.
There was no way to know that. I enjoyed X-Men First Class. I also know that X-Men movies have a history of making lots of good money. If I were going to put my money down on a bet, I would want something that is pretty close to a sure thing. There's no way to know if that horse's rider was just coming in last.
Well, a good part of the problem is that there has been an overabundance of superhero movies this summer.
Not just this summer. I mean, it's gotten worse this summer, but I mean, it's been going on for a while.
This is true. I think it's coming to a head this summer.
To be honest, I don't think it's a problem with too many superhero movies. If you did 52 superhero movies a year, that would be fine. What you really have to do is make good movies. Batman and Dark Knight aren't good movies because they're superhero movies. They're good movies because they're just good movies.
Whereas the movies that have come out so far this summer, we've had a really good one, we've had a pretty good one, and we've had one that was okay. And where these three movies fall on that ranking, I think is where we're going to have a little bit of discussion. So let's dive in and talk about the movies that have come out so far this summer. Just due to my OCD, or as Ken likes to say, my
COD. That way it's compulsive obsessive disorder and it's actually alphabetical order.
Yes.
So we'll start with Green Lantern because it comes before Thor or X-Men.
I'm thinking chronological.
Oh, okay.
So let's talk about Thor. Thor came out in May and was the first of the trio of Marvel movies that are coming out over the summer. Now, I will admit that both before I saw this movie and after I saw it, I had the same concern. And that is that it's often difficult to blend a superhero movie set in modern day Earth and a fantasy film. And that's exactly what they were trying to do with it. I thought that Kenneth Branagh did an okay job with it, but it was only an okay job.
I would definitely agree with you. It was okay. It didn't blow.
I found it similarly okay. I don't know that there was anything wrong with it, but if I don't see it again, and I'm saying this as the one who said during our Thor cast, you know, I'm not a Marvel fan anyway, but it was just, okay, it was a Thor movie.
Going back to my comment about I'd watch 52 superhero movies a year if they were a good movie, it was okay.
Yeah, it was just okay. The next one that came out was X-Men First Class. This was a period piece, and it did a very good job of creating an alternative history. If you're going to do a period piece involving superheroes, I really do believe it has to be a believable alternate history. And I thought it did a good job of pulling that off. It tied in just enough pieces to real-world events, and yet incorporated in the idea that there's also these superhuman mutants running around.
Well, I want to get a little bit to what you're talking about, this alternate history. And one of the things I like about the modern superhero movie is they're actually bringing in the alternate history. They're not trying to do like this 70s superhero movies and just take the character and then try and set that character in our world. That does not work. You really need to have that background story. You really need to have the filler material to fill in why people would accept superheroes. Really, I'm thinking back to something like the Kathy Lee Crosby Wonder Woman movie. It's hard to even discuss those movies.
If they had called her, you know, Danger Woman or Action Woman and never mentioned Paradise Island, then it probably would have been a perfectly serviceable action movie.
And as I've said before, there are movies done modern day that if they changed the name, it'd be a perfectly serviceable movie. So it still happens today.
You know, that's a really good point. I enjoyed the Spirit movie. not a huge fan, but I actually enjoyed it.
Sam Jones is a good actor. But it is a spirit movie we're talking about, right?
The Frank Miller movie. So what? It wasn't the spirit. It was a fun little superhero-esque movie.
Okay.
You thought it was a fun superhero movie. And I think Ken would have enjoyed it better if it had been called The Ghost. Or
Frank Miller's superhero movie.
Yeah, Frank Miller's superhero movie might have actually worked. But
you're right. The Ghost wouldn't have worked. He wouldn't have looked at all good in the white bustier and white hood.
Resurrection guy. Regeneration Man.
So, coming back to X-Men First Class, I think the fact that they took all of the background of the X-Men and tried to put it as a historical context really worked for me. My biggest problems with the movie is they're calling it X-Men First Class, and there are several plot points in it which have discontinuity with the other movies also entitled X-Men.
Yeah, in a lot of ways this was supposed to be a prequel, but I think it could easily have been a reboot instead.
I wasn't worried about that, honestly. I enjoyed this story from a superhero story during the Cuban Missile Crisis standpoint, and I found the characters likable, and my usual issue with the X-Men, at least in the comic book form, once again in film, didn't come up, so I was okay with that.
I will say that the two cameo appearances, both by Rebecca Romijn and by Hugh Jackman, were incredibly funny. Again, it kind of blurs that line between prequel and reboot, but that's okay. It was funny.
I thought the movie was successful in many ways. I thought it was successful in its story. I thought it was successful in its humor. I thought it was successful in the action and adventure. It had guns. It had explosions. I don't think it had an actual car chase, though. But I guess if you're riding around in an SR-71 Blackbird, you're not really going to have a car chase.
And a boat chase.
Very true. It had several of them, in fact. Now, this is one of those points where I think there's going to be just a tad bit of contention between Ken and myself, because of the three that have come out so far, this was actually my favorite of the superhero summer blockbusters. It's also the one that made less amount of money, and I really wish that it had come out before Thor had, because I think the lineup may have had some effect. I think people went and saw Thor and basically said, I think I've had enough superhero movies for the summer, and didn't go to see X-Men. Decided that they'd hold off until it came out on DVD. So I do think that Thor coming out first may have had a negative influence on X-Men First Class's box office numbers.
My guess is Thor coming out first is going to hurt all of the summer superhero movies.
I think you're right on that point. And you're actually wrong about the intention of the ones I've seen so far. X-Men is probably the best of the three films.
Okay. I figured our next one would be at the top of your list, so I'm pleasantly surprised. That next one being Green Lantern, DC's only offering to this summer list.
Well, I'm going to put in my 2 cents now, because I haven't actually seen the movie. I'll tell you that the trailers, to me, made it look like a train wreck. So, since I'm not a person to give a review off of a trailer, I'll leave it to the experts.
Where? Oh, you mean us. God help us. Okay, I'm going to start this out by putting in the prerequisite spoiler alert, because this movie only came out about a month ago. So there is a chance that you didn't actually get out to see it yet. So, again, spoiler alert at this point. Now, one of my big concerns about this movie was the idea of trying to tell both an outer space action film and an Earth-based superhero film. And I was concerned that they were trying to do too many things in one movie. I will say that I thought that they did a better job of blending the two than I thought that they were going to. There were still a few places here and there where I wish that they had done a better transition between the two, especially the further you got into the film. There were a couple of scenes where he was on Earth, then the very next scene he was back on Oa, and then the very next scene he was back on Earth, and I wish that there had been a little bit more transition there. But
it's empowering. You don't need much time for the transition.
True enough. I just wish that there had been a couple of seconds more of transition. But I thought they did a good job of blending the two. I know that a lot of people have complained that they wish the entire Earth thing hadn't been in the film and they had just concentrated on the Green Lantern Corps, but that'd be like ignoring half of Green Lantern. He really is both the outer space and the Earthbound.
Yeah, and there were people who were complaining because they had included the space stuff and wish they had just done Earthbound. I've already said, I actually thought X-Men First Class was the better film. That said, I do not have any complaints about the Green Lantern film.
I think they did a very good job. I like the cast. I like the story. Absolutely comes down to it. The story just wasn't as strong as the X-Men First Class story. And I'm actually amused, when I'm not disturbed, by all the complaints that people make because there is no consistency to the complaints. You ask somebody about what's wrong with Phantom Menace, you've got a pretty good stock answer that you're going to get, right?
Yeah, there's usually a list of about 5 things, and usually everybody hits one of those 5.
Right, with this one, there isn't that consistency. It'll be one, or it'll be the exact opposite. Hal was too brash. Hal wasn't brash enough. Hal was too funny. Hal wasn't funny enough. Too much time on Owen. Too much time on Earth. They can't make up their minds. It's like everybody had expectations for it, and by trying to shoot for the middle, they apparently missed everybody's.
That or people are just way too freaking picky. I did enjoy it. I thought Ryan Reynolds did do a good job. I thought he had a pretty decent supporting cast. Blake Lively was arbitrary female lead number 12. Then again, I don't know how many people could have done a whole lot with the character of Carol Ferris with what was written for her.
Yeah.
But speaking of people's complaints and people's confusions and people's finickiness, one of the other complaints that you've heard has been around the character of Sinestro.
Right. Okay. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen the film, is completely unfamiliar with Green Lantern, and is completely oblivious to the obviousness of 1960s villain naming inventions. His name is Sinestro. He's not a good person. In the second film, he's going to be the bad guy. The character was created as a bad guy with being a Green Lantern in his backstory, but since they didn't actually know that in the earliest stories, we didn't actually see that. But when you're doing it on film several decades later, you can include him. They did. So you have this guy, and he is pretty much a jerk ass to Hal every time he sees him. He's arrogant. He looks like he's interested in doing a good job, and I do honestly believe that he is. But he's very much, okay, we need more power to beat the bad guy. We need more power to beat the bad guy. And he's very down on the whole idea of a human being in general, and Hal Jordan in particular, having a power ring throughout most of the film. In what I'm sure is going to be a huge spoiler, Hal beats the bad guy, and Sinestro is very much, okay, good job, good job. Like, how many hundreds of films has that happened, where the older, more experienced guy, he's a jerk-ass to the hero throughout most of the film, and at the end, he warms up to the hero, right?
He's won over by the hero's ingenuity and whatever else he seems to be bringing to the table.
Yeah, it's a standard trope in film, yes?
Yes.
The one I remember is Cary Elwes was parodying it in Hot Shots. I mean, I'm sure it was based on somebody in Top Gun, but I've never actually seen Top Gun, so...
Very much a stereotype. Any military film has the big nasty drill sergeant who just busts balls and in the end he appreciates what the hero has done. The movie Stripes comes to mind as well.
It's just an ongoing trope. The thing is in the little bit of film that they show after they've started the credits, we see Sinestro do something which pretty much hints that, oh gee, no, he really is a bad guy. Which, like I said, his name is Sinestro. Him really being a bad guy shouldn't surprise anybody. But apparently, the human race, at least the movie-going portion of us, are so programmed to accept the, oh, he's warming up to the hero because it's the end of the movie and the hero saved the day, that we're assuming, oh, he really is warming up to the hero and because the hero saved the day. And the idea that the guy might just be lying because he's a damn politician doesn't cross anyone's mind. And it's like, hello? If you know the mythology, none of this should be as a surprise to you. The part that should have rang false is the, he's warming up? What?
Al's won him over? How'd that happen? They're going to go completely against everything that they've ever taught about this character.
Like, oh, wait, no, it's not, and they're being true to the mythology, and why do people have a problem with this?
Those of you who were confused, shame on you. You need to put more comic books into your reading diet.
No, they don't.
Yeah, you're right. With what DC is currently doing, please don't. Go to your local comic book store, go to the boxes of old comics, and find stuff to read.
I find, as far as just a good Superman meets Star Wars kind of film, I think Green Lantern did an excellent job of what it was trying to be.
So, doing a very quick rundown, Doug, Pens in the Pocket Protector, Thor?
1.5.
Ken?
I go 2.5, I'm feeling more generous.
This is out of 4.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. I'm going to agree with Doug's 1.5. X-Men?
I give it 3.
Ken?
I go 3.
Okay, three's across the board. You don't get a vote on Green Lantern because you haven't seen it yet?
Looks like a train wreck.
Ken?
I'll give it three.
Okay, I'm going to go with 2.5 just because I said it wasn't quite as good. That brings us to release number 4. Captain America, Marvel's patriotic son. A little bit of background real quick. He debuted in Captain America Comics number 1 from Timely Comics, which was the predecessor to Marvel Comics, in March 1941. It was primarily a war comic with Captain America fighting Nazis. Once the war ended, the character's popularity kind of faded, disappearing by the 1950s. There were a few ill-fated attempts to use the character that have been retconned to have been other characters dressed in Cap's clothes. Now, the character may have faded into obscurity, except for the fact that in 1964, in The Avengers number 4, the character was found floating in a block of ice and was thawed out and became a member of the Avengers. While the character has had multiple ups and downs over the past almost 50 years, he has remained one of Marvel's most respected characters.
Except for when they were disrespecting him with the U.S. agent and all that crap.
That would be considered one of the downs. And even at that, it wasn't so much that they were disrespecting him as much as almost disrespecting America, saying that what America stood for was different at that point, which they then turned around after telling a year's worth of stories and said, no, Captain America doesn't stand for what America is. Captain America stands for what America should be.
Which was always the point all along in those stories. I mean, the putting in John Walker and taking Steve Rogers out of the job and all that. I mean, that was one of the few times I was actually reading Cap regularly. And it was because they were actually telling a story that was designed to ultimately build Steve back up. You know, the early parts of the story weren't the best time if you were a Steve Rogers fan. But if you understand the rules of drama, you could tell, okay, they are taking him down as part of a bigger thing. Yeah.
And as many times as I make crack jokes about teaming up War Machine, U.S. Agent, and Thunderstrike to face off against the Eradicator, Ezreal, and Artemis, it really was a pretty decent storyline. Now, Cap has made appearances in other media besides comic books. In 1944, Captain America had a movie serial starring Dick Purcell, but it had very little in common with the comic book character. In 1979, there were 2 live-action TV movies starring Reb Brown, and I will fully admit that I still have fond memories of watching those 2 TV movies. They were horribly bad and very campy, but as bad as they were, there are still things like Ken humming the theme music to it, or making references to launching a motorcycle out of the back of a conversion van that mean I still have fond memories of it.
I enjoyed them, but they were really, really awful.
Let's make that a unanimous 3. I remember being 9 or 10 years old and really enjoying them. And when you're 9 and 10, you can really enjoy things that are very awful.
Okay, we were all kind of young, but was anyone besides me going, what the heck's up with his uniform? Why didn't they just use the Captain America uniform right from the beginning?
Yeah, I was there.
Okay.
That and the windshield shield.
That was bizarre.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't even be good to see through, because you have to be looking through the red and blue paint. I mean, it was just...
That, and it was obviously some sort of plexiglass-type substance, and how is that bouncing bullets?
They discovered the formula for transparent aluminum.
But as bad as the Reb Brown versions were, it was not nearly as bad as the 1990 film that never even made it to theaters.
Matt Salinger.
I call it the Billy Mumy one, because Billy Mumy was in it.
Okay. First of all, it stars Matt Salinger. Now, other than having a famous dad, J.D. Salinger, Catcher in the Rye, what can you tell me about Matt Salinger?
He was in a movie with Billy Mumy.
Well, yes, but he was actually in at least one other movie that I know we've all seen. He was in Revenge of the Nerds. Remember, among the Alpha Betas, there were the 3 guys. There's Ted McGinley's character, who was the main guy in the film. Ogre. And then there's the other guy. The other guy is Matt Salinger.
Okay, anytime that your career is, I played second banana to Ted McGinley, I think it's time to give up acting.
I don't know that I've seen him in anything other than...
Those 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember the padded Captain America suit and the horrible, horrible Red Skull mask.
That was right after the Michael Keaton Batman film, right?
It was pretty close to right after the Batman Michael Keaton film.
And Batman had the armored suit thing, so why couldn't Captain America?
Because Batman's armored suit looked like it was probably body armor. His was made so that it looked like it was supposed to be spandex over muscle, and it just failed miserably.
At least it didn't have bat nipples.
This is true. But it was also in that time period where DC was reinventing its movie franchise, and Marvel was trying its best to try to invent a movie franchise, but was trying to do it on such a cheap. It was the time of the first Fantastic Four movie. The one that was never released.
The Roger Corman movie.
It was the time of the Dolph Lundgren Punisher movie.
Arguably, of everything Marvel had done at this point, the best.
Yes, it actually made it to the theater. So this was a really rough time for Marvel movies. And, oh yeah, in case we didn't say it, it was bad. He's also had a few appearances in animation. He was one of the 5 featured stars in the 1966 Marvel Superheroes show.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Is that what they're calling it these days?
Yeah, if you haven't picked up on it yet, Ken is the guru on the obscure music stuff. There was another 1990s attempt to do a Captain America thing that had his name really being Tommy Tompkins, and Steve Rogers was just an alias he was using, and yeah, this never made it to TV, but that was probably a good thing. But Cap did start making a comeback in the 2000s with being one of the key characters in the animated Ultimate Avengers movies.
He did a pretty good job of whooping on the Hulk in the Ultimate comic book also.
Captain America also made a few guest appearances in both of the Spider-Man series, both the one in 1981 and in 1994. He made a couple of appearances on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, X-Men, X-Men Evolution, and The Avengers United They Stand. He is currently featured on both The Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes on Disney's XD and on the Superhero Squad show on Cartoon Network.
A few episodes of that I've seen I've actually enjoyed. I haven't watched it regularly, but the few I've seen I actually enjoyed.
I've always had a problem with the super deformed artwork type thing. It just throws me off. But I do like Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
I prefer the Earth's Mightiest Heroes myself.
Yeah, those are good. Which brings us to Captain America, the First Avenger.
Today, for the first time, I actually have seen a trailer for it. And since I've given you my rating for the Green Lantern trailer as Trainwreck, I'll give you my rating for the trailer of Captain America vs. Avenger. Doesn't suck.
I am really looking forward to Captain America. Out of all the Marvel characters, he is probably in my top 3. I've always liked Captain America over Spider-Man and over all the X-Men, and basically, a lot of the characters that they've already done movies for, I haven't been nearly as much of a fan of those characters as I am of Captain America. So I'm really looking forward to this. I love the fact that, again, they're going to do kind of a period piece. They are going to tell his origins. I have no problem with Chris Evans playing the character, in spite of the fact that he played Johnny Storm.
The few trailers I've seen, I didn't recognize him. I mean, I know it's Chris Evans intellectually. He doesn't look like Johnny Storm at all.
He looks like Steve Rogers. I think that he looks as much like Steve Rogers as
Ryan Reynolds looks like Hal Jordan?
As Robert Downey Jr. looks like Tony Stark to me.
Listen, Robert Downey Jr. playing a rich alcoholic playboy. Stretch of the imagination?
I really think that they did a good job of casting. Whether he's wearing a rubber suit or if he actually bulked himself up like that, I don't know. But either way, it looks real.
One of the ads I've seen has him with his shirt off. He either bulked up or it's CGI.
Yeah, he looks like the peak of human perfection. I really think that Captain America has the potential of being one of the best Marvel movies to come out.
Solely based on the trailer, I would agree with you.
I'm not 100% convinced. I agree Chris Evans looks like Steve Rogers should. The general look of the character, I can accept.
Yeah, they're definitely going with the ultimate Captain America in the way of the uniform, as opposed to anyone who knows what the original comic books look like. There is a difference in the costume appearance, but I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. But basically, it's the same studio that made Thor, right?
Yes.
Also the same studio that made Iron Man, in all fairness.
Yes.
I'm not convinced it's going to suck. I'm not convinced it's going to be great. So far, it looks pretty good. I know I'm afraid of the apologists being involved.
Yeah, that is one of my only real hang-ups about it. And it has nothing to do with the movie itself, but more to do with how they're going to try to market it, especially overseas. The title of the movie is Captain America, the First Avenger. The reason they have the subheading in there is because when they market it overseas, they plan on cutting off the Captain America part of the title. They're just going to distribute it as the First Avenger. That's because they feel that America has a negative enough reputation that it would actually lower sales having America as part of the title.
They're right. America right now is not a beloved country in a huge portion of the world.
Unfortunately, you're correct. But eventually, people are going to get into the movie theater, and they're going to hear the character referred to as Captain America. You're essentially apologizing for the name of the character and trying to trick people into
going to see a movie called The First Avenger, where you can look on the poster and see some guy in a star-spangled, white stars on blue, red and white stripes costume right there in the poster, right?
Correct.
So you could call him Captain Britain.
They don't have stars on their flag.
That's true enough. The right color scheme. I don't agree that we're trying to apologize for him being called Captain America. I do agree with the fact that we're trying to trick people who don't know about him into going to see the movie.
Even worse, I think you're trying to trick people who are opposed to America to go see a Captain America film.
I severely doubt that we're going to be marketing this movie in Iran or Libya or North Korea. That doesn't seem to be the big markets out there. Now, perhaps we might try and market this in Hong Kong, and we're not exactly the Chinese best friends.
I have to say, I would like to encourage anyone who is a comic book fan to go on out and see the Captain America film. While I feel as though they are deluging us with a lot of superhero films that aren't necessarily good superhero films, I don't want them to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't want them to start going, oh, well, these aren't as profitable as we thought they were going to be. Let's stop making them.
Well, as long as they keep making good superhero movies, they're still going to make the good ones. They're just going to stop making second and third tier superhero movies. I hear the guy from the Old Spice commercials wants to do Luke Cage, and that's fine. But if it's not a good movie, why bother? On the other hand, The Dark Knight Rises, I suspect, based on past experience, is going to be a very good movie.
Yeah, I almost wish that they wouldn't be concentrating all of their efforts on producing movies and that they'd work on producing some decent TV shows. Because I think Luke Cage would be an excellent choice for a TV series starring the Old Spice guy. I think he would be a phenomenal Luke Cage, and I think that you could build a TV series around that particular character and have him have adventures.
I challenge you to go to any mall in America, though, and ask three people if they know who Luke Cage is.
Well, you don't call it Luke Cage. You call it Power Man and Iron Fist. Do it as a buddy TV show.
You said good.
Yeah, but that's actually one of the advantages that Luke Cage has. One of the things that they tend to like to steer clear of is the whole costume thing. And Luke Cage doesn't wear a costume. Get people who know something about the character to make a TV show, as opposed to whatever that train wreck was that they managed to avoid with Wonder Woman.
What do you guys think of Henry Cavill as Superman?
The movie will have Kevin Costner in it as a guest star. You're going to have a hard time getting me into a movie scene, period.
Well, if they stay true to most versions of this story, you'll see Kevin Costner die.
I don't know how he will do as Kal-El. My only concern is that they're trying to crank out a movie just so that they can keep the movie rights. And that's rarely a good reason to be pushing to make a movie. But that's something for us to discuss in next year's HeroCast. We talked about Thor, we talked about Captain America. Both these and the Iron Man movies are building up to next year's Avengers. My question to you is, has Marvel done a good job in building up to this film event?
It's going to be directed by Joss Whedon. They had me at Joss.
I'm taking a wait-and-see approach. Like Iron Man was me about Thor, so...
I will second Doug's, you had me at Joss, but a Avengers origin story without either Hank or Janet somehow feels a little bit wrong to me. I'm hoping that they are actually in the film. Other than that, I'm looking forward to it.
As always, we would appreciate your feedback. Please write Jim at twerponline.net. We can also be reached at Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
This has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2011.
The hang glider. The hang glider popping out of the back of the motorbike. That was pretty damn stupid.